This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Iran retaliates. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenko. Wednesday, January 8th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Iran has fired more than a dozen missiles at U.S. troops stationed at separate bases in Iraq. Retribution for the targeted killing of a military general.
Lawmakers on Capitol Hill were quick to respond. You'll hear reaction from elected officials in both parties.
Breaking this morning, a Ukrainian airline with nearly 180 people on board has crashed shortly after takeoff in Iran. There were no survivors.
And circling back to our top story with a new angle, will Trump properties be considered low-hanging fruit for additional Iranian retaliation?
His brand is across the globe. He has a golf club in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, which is right across the Persian Gulf from Iran. He's got properties in Europe and in India, all over the place. And so there's some security specialists who feel like that's sort of the low-hanging fruit, if you will.
Dave Boyer at the Washington Times on security amid tension with Tehran. Iran has retaliated for the U.S. killing of military leader Qasem Soleimani. More than a dozen ballistic missiles were fired at American forces at a pair of bases next door in Iraq. The Pentagon says the strikes at Erbil in northern Iraq and the larger al-Assad base in western Iraq took place at around 1:30 in the morning local time. There appeared to be no U.S. casualties at either attack site, but assessments were ongoing. Prior to the attack, President Trump earlier in the day yesterday seemed to walk back statements about retaliating against Iranian cultural sites.
I like to obey the law, but think of it. They kill our people, they blow up our people, and then we have to be very gentle with their cultural institutions. But I'm okay with it.
Meanwhile, it's not clear if Iran's attack against the U.S. in Iraq was complete. 10 ballistic missiles reportedly struck the al-Assad base, while one struck the base in Erbil. 4 other missiles are said to have failed, according to the Wall Street Journal. The Iranian attacks sent global stocks lower, while oil surged and haven assets rallied. Lawmakers quickly reacted after Iran fired more than a dozen missiles at U.S. troops and coalition forces in Iraq. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi tweeted that, quote, America and the world cannot afford war. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy tweeted that we must be united in the fight against terrorism and those who would do our country harm. Massachusetts Democrat Senator Elizabeth Warren on the presidential campaign trail.
This is a reminder why we need to de-escalate tension in the Middle East.
On Fox News, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said that if Iran continues, quote, this crap, they are going to wake up one day out of the oil business. New York Republican Congressman Tom Reed on Fox News.
I have 100% confidence in our commander-in-chief and in the White House and the expertise that is there. They are truly experts in their field, and they'll respond to this appropriately.
Minnesota Democrat Congresswoman Ilhan Omar posted, quote, war doesn't have a reset button. Many innocent lives will be lost. Let's call for peace. Tragedy in the skies overseas earlier today. A Ukrainian airliner crashed shortly after taking off in Iran, killing all 176 people on board. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The Boeing 737, belonging to Ukraine International Airlines, crashed near Khomeini Airport in Tehran and burst into flames. Ukraine's embassy in Iran said that based on initial information, the plane had suffered engine failure and the crash was not caused by terrorism. It was the first fatal crash for Ukraine International Airlines, which is based in the capital of Kiev. Iranian TV said one of the plane's 2 black boxes had been found. The model that went down, the 737-800, is one of the world's most flown models with a good safety record. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Iranian media quoted an Iranian aviation official as saying the pilot of the airliner did not declare an emergency. Reiterating here, nobody is saying that the plane crash is tied to current tensions in the Middle East. Roughly half those on board were Iranians. The plane was headed from Tehran to Kiev. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
New year, new budgets. Every small business has unique needs. When you partner with a Dell Small Business Technology Advisor, you get real-time, tailored advice. They'll even give you a free audit on your servers and storage devices to develop a custom solution to help improve your company's productivity. Plus, right now, upgrade to Windows 10 and get up to 45% off select business computers with Intel Core processors. To speak with a Dell Advisor, call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for joining us. Busy news day this Wednesday morning. More about the Iranian missile strikes targeting U.S. forces in Iraq in just a moment, plus the Ukrainian airlines crash. Jennifer will have details shortly. Meanwhile, security specialists say the Trump Organization is certain to review its precautions in light of the rising tensions between Tehran and Washington over the U.S. killing of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani last week. In addition to Trump hotels in major U.S. cities, the Trump Organization has properties in the UAE, India, Scotland, Ireland, South Korea, the Philippines, and elsewhere. Dave Boyer, White House correspondent at The Washington Times, has been speaking with security experts about prepping for retaliation. Dave, what are you hearing?
There's a lot of security experts who feel that way, especially regarding Trump properties overseas. President Trump obviously was a businessman before he was elected. His brand is across the globe. He has a golf club in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, which is right across the Persian Gulf from Iran. He's got properties in Europe and India, all over the place. And so there's some security specialists who feel like that's sort of the low-hanging fruit, if you will, if Iran or a lone wolf terrorist type wanted to do harm to U.S. interests anywhere.
Is there ramped up security at those properties, whether they are domestic or overseas?
You know, they're not saying, but everybody you talk to in the security world says that undoubtedly they are. I was talking to a former FBI official who worked in New York. He said, you know, they have to be reviewing their security procedures and just making sure they're doing everything they can under this heightened state of alert, because you've got, you know, the U.S. military over there in the Middle East is on high alert right now, and obviously they've got to consider these Trump properties as a kind of a tempting target for Iran.
Would it matter in terms of retaliation to Iran, whether it was a U.S. military site that was overseas or a Trump property?
It's a great question. I don't know. Officially, in public, Iranians are expressing an interest in attacking U.S. military sites, and there's certainly plenty. There's hundreds of them around the world. Yeah. There's also the feeling among, you know, security analysts that, you know, any property, if you hate America and you hate what President Trump ordered, you know, the killing of this Iranian general, you know, it's got to be an attractive target for them to attack a building with the name Trump on top of it.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dave Boyer, White House correspondent at The Washington Times. He's written a piece about Trump properties potentially being low-hanging fruit for those in Iran who might want to retaliate against the U.S. You referenced, too, that just kind of observing things around Washington, folks might experience, say, certain properties cutting off, or we call choking off certain access points, like what, limiting where people can go in and out to maybe just one area?
Yes. And for example, the property I'm most familiar with, a few blocks from the White House, is the Trump Hotel in Washington on Pennsylvania Avenue. They've already done that as a matter of course. They have just a couple lines of bicycle racks in front of the hotel along Pennsylvania Avenue, which forces people to go in one specific entrance that's off the street further. And they've got, obviously a lot of security personnel around that entrance as a matter of course. I'm sure that other properties are doing the same, taking a look at that kind of restriction as well.
Additionally, or extra large suitcases could be subject to random search, as you said.
That's true. And, you know, that's the tough thing about protecting hotels. The nature of a hotel is you have essentially strangers coming in and out all the time to stay there or eat there. And, some people have mentioned, for example, the case of the shooter in Las Vegas who was hauling you know, repeatedly a large number of very large suitcases up to his room, and nobody questioned it, nobody stopped him, nobody searched him. I don't think that kind of thing would fly anymore, especially at a Trump property.
Yeah. I wonder, too, if the retaliation thinking has changed at all or adjusted since President Trump indicated that cultural sites were not off limits when it comes to the, you know, U.S. potentially doing more damage.
Yeah, there are security people, analysts who are especially worried about that kind of ratcheting up, you know, taking it up a notch.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Boyer, White House correspondent at The Washington Times. 21 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with three big things you need to know.
Number one, Gordon, Iran struck back at the U.S. early today for killing a top Revolutionary Guard commander, firing a series of ballistic missiles at two military bases in Iraq that house U.S. troops in a major escalation between the two longtime foes. It was Iran's most direct assault on the U.S. since the 1979 seizing of the U.S. embassy in Tehran. Before the strike, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper defended the administration's decision to kill the Iranian general.
There are always a wide range of options. Our duty is to narrow them down into ones that are consistent with the president's guidance or expectation or can meet the political end state we're trying to achieve.
An administration official says there appeared to be no U.S. casualties at either attack site, but added that it's early. The official added that there are likely some Iraqi casualties. Number two, a Ukrainian passenger jet carrying 176 people crashed today just minutes after taking off from the Iranian capital's main airport, turning farmland on the outskirts of Tehran into fields of flaming debris and killing all on board. The crash of Ukraine International Airlines came hours after Iran launched a missile attack on Iraqi bases housing U.S. soldiers. But both Ukrainian and Iranian officials say they suspect a mechanical issue brought down the Boeing 737-800 aircraft. Ukraine's foreign minister says Iranian, Canadian, Ukrainian, Swedish, Afghan, British, and German nationals were killed in the crash. Number three, Puerto Rico is under a state of emergency after it was hit by a 6.4 magnitude earthquake early yesterday morning. At least one person is dead and millions are without power. Many people are on edge, bracing for more aftershocks. Geophysicist John Geiger.
Usually the aftershocks are smaller, but that's not always the case. There is a potential for a larger aftershock. We predict that there's a 3% chance of something larger happening within the following week after the main shock.
Governor Wanda Vasquez Garcet is urging people to remain calm but vigilant. It's been just over 2 years since Hurricane Maria hit the U.S. territory. And on a lighter note this morning, it's that time of year again, Girl Scout cookie time. And joining the Thin Mints, Samoas, and Tagalongs this year is a new entry, Lemon Ups. The crispy Lemon Up wafers are stamped with positive affirmations like, I am a leader and I am a go-getter.
Very good. Thank you, Jen. It is 23 minutes after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Economists say that 2020 will be a positive year for the housing market, although it may not be dazzling, and that could be good news for renters and home buyers alike. But that's assuming experts' forecasts are right. More from Jacob Passy, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Jacob set this up.
Lots of forecasts have come out with the end of the year, and to start things off, I need to give the disclaimer that forecasts aren't perfect. No one has 2020 vision looking towards the future. Real estate economists may get it right more times than the weatherman, but you know they'll still get it wrong. And last year, there was an extent to which the forecasts were not perfect. You know, they kind of anticipated mortgage rates being much higher all year long, and therefore substantial dip in sales. And you know that dip in sales did happen for the first half of the year, but then sales rebound in the second half of the year when mortgage rates came down. Overall, the sales volume last year was actually lower than was anticipated, so just got to get that out of front. But you know, basically, in 2020, economists expect that home prices and home sales are going to kind of stay roughly even with the pace we saw last year in terms of growth. The Federal Reserve isn't anticipating any major changes to the national interest rate policy, so mortgage rates are probably going to stay the same, but affordability is still a huge challenge, and So as long as affordability is a challenge, home sales are going to stay, you know, kind of flat, or certainly won't grow as much as they have in years past.
Euro 2, many economists expected something of a repeat of the taper tantrum of 2013. What was that?
So back in 2013, when Federal Reserve President Ben Bernanke indicated that the central bank would buy fewer bonds and then hike interest rates, it caused the 10-year Treasury and mortgage rates to jump, and that triggered a substantial dip in home sales. So that's what folks were expecting for 2019. So they were expecting, you know, the higher interest rates on home loans would lead to much lower volume of home sales because, you know, people it takes time to kind of adjust for the higher price that you're paying. So for next year, you know, good news is that most experts expect mortgage rates to stay the same, not necessarily go down, but not necessarily go up either, you know, kind of stay in this realm of, you know, the upper 3% range. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the flip side of that is if interest rates do go up for some reason, which, you know, they could go up for any number of reasons related to, you know, global economic conditions, you know, domestic economic conditions, et cetera, if interest rates do go up, you know, that could cause a lot of people to, you know, not be able to afford to buy a home, and then you'll see a substantial dip in home sales most likely.
Thanks, Jacob. Jacob Passy, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's a new year, the perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. ZipRecruiter is so effective, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Busy news day this morning. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Iran retaliates against the U.S. with missile strikes. President Trump expected to address the nation about it today. A Ukraine Airlines jet crashed shortly after takeoff in Iran today, killing all 176 on board. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he has the votes to set impeachment trial rules that don't guarantee new witnesses. Much of Puerto Rico remains in the dark after an earthquake. Rainstorms bring temporary relief to Australian wildfires. And the Pennsylvania girl reunited with an important doll ahead of what will be her 40th surgery. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Let Dell Small Business Technology Advisors help you upgrade to your latest Windows 10 business computers with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BY-DELL. Good luck making sense of what's likely to happen in the contest for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination. Philip Bump, national correspondent at The Washington Post, says it correlates neatly with how closely you're looking at it. In the abstract, he says, it seems like a mess with a field of more than 24 trimmed down only partially, and a leading pack that still overstuffs debate stages. But he says dig a little deeper and things seem more certain. Philip, explain.
Yeah, I mean, there are always a lot of moving parts right before the primaries. You know, that's the entire point of having the primaries. But this year's unique for a variety of reasons. The first, of course, is that we have this big field. And it's not just that it's a big field. Obviously, we have, you know, your Marianne Williamsons who aren't going to make much of a dent. But there are four candidates who are pulling really well and eating up a lot of the vote and are really going to be jockeying for a position here. You combine that with a Democratic primary system, which is relatively proportionate, but also sets this floor of 15%. You have to get 15% of the vote in a state in order to get any delegates, which makes that a mark that people need to hit in a crowded field. And then layer on top of that the fact that Iowa this year is going to be reporting three different sets of results. They're going to be reporting the first round picks, the final round picks, and then the actual delegate allocations, which could mean three different candidates come out of Iowa saying, hey, I won this thing. Mm. All of those things together mean a very, very uncertain February.
And as you point out with New Hampshire, more than a week later, that leaves lots of time to debate and massage those numbers as to, right, who did what or who accomplished what or who still needs to do what before New Hampshire.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It gives a lot of time for people to get out there and try and spin what happened in Iowa, to talk about what they're going to do next in New Hampshire. It's not unusual, again, that there is that gap, but because Iowa is seen as being determinative and this year is less likely to be determinative, makes that week a lot more fraught.
All right, so then it seems very complicated in Iowa, which, as you point out, is not necessarily reflective of the Democrat elective. So then what happens once we get to New Hampshire?
Yeah, so that's actually a really important point. So if you look at Iowa and New Hampshire, these are both traditionally the first two states in for the past however many election cycles, but they are also, for the Democrats, states that don't reflect the composition of the party itself. They are overwhelmingly white states, and that is problematic for former Vice President Joe Biden, who does better with non-white voters, or I should say, he overperforms with non-white voters. We saw this same dynamic in 2016 when Bernie Sanders did fairly well with white voters and Hillary Clinton did better with non-white voters, and the reason she beat Sanders is because she ran up huge totals in heavily non-white states, and so Sanders is never able to overcome that. She also basically tied Sanders in Iowa. Biden probably isn't going to do that well in Iowa, isn't going to do as well as Clinton did, and he's going to be looking forward to Nevada and South Carolina, where he should be doing better. So he also, even if he doesn't do that well in Iowa and New Hampshire, assuming that people don't turn on him, which isn't necessarily a fair assumption,
yeah,
he stands poised to do better in the third and fourth contests. And so, we know all this coming into it. It's going to be fascinating to see how it shakes out.
We're speaking with Philip Bump, national correspondent at The Washington Post. You said, too, that Biden and Sanders have been fairly static in the polls.
Right.
Warren and Buttigieg more volatile. What does that mean, I guess, as we head toward these early voting states?
Well, I think it's one of the reasons why people are talking a lot about Sanders right now. Sanders has that core base of support. Much of it is carried over from 2016, although not all of it. I actually went back and looked at how his base now compares to how he was doing at the peak of the 2016 race, and he really is back to the people who first supported him 3-4 years ago.
Thanks, Philip. Philip Bump, national correspondent at The Washington Post. Keeping tabs this morning on things like the Iranian missile attacks on the U.S., also the Ukrainian plane crash. A lot of moving parts on a busy Wednesday morning. Thanks for being with us. Of course, our top story this morning, Iran retaliating against the U.S. for the killing of a military general by firing missiles at a pair of American joint bases in Iraq. Plus, there was a Ukrainian airliner that went down shortly after takeoff from Tehran. We'll have all of that in just a few moments. Meanwhile, the U.S. Congress is divided in almost every way, but as it heads into a bitter 2020, there is one issue where Republicans and Democrats have found a surprising consensus, and that's hating on the NCAA. It's a story by Louise Radnofsky, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Louise, what do we know?
Yeah, the key issue that Congress has really reached an almost surprising and unusual consensus on is this issue of whether athletes should be compensated for the use of their name, image, or likeness. And they definitely got a kick start on that effort from efforts in the states, especially the California Fair Pay to Play Act. Perhaps more unusually, they've also got a little bit of an encouragement almost from the NCAA itself, not usually known for its support of changing things or federal legislation, because at this point the NCAA is eyeing up to 30 different states coming up with bills of their own in California's wake, and so Congress is willing to step in and offer a federal plan. They've talked about this for a number of years, but what's different is the NCAA might be willing to agree to it.
Yeah, and what's interesting too, I think if I understand this right, the members of Congress on opposite sides of the political aisle agree in many cases to compensate athletes, but not for the same reasons.
Right. I mean, there are a number of very important divisions between members of Congress at this precise moment, but there is one area where they have almost uniformly among the people who have an opinion disagreement, and that is that people should be paid for their work, including student athletes. And in the case of many Democrats, they talk about it in terms of civil rights, or they talk about it in terms of exploitation, or in the case of one Democrat, she talks about it as an artist, which is her job before she came to Congress. On the Republican side, they often talk about it as a free market issue, that the market is distorted by the fact that student athletes are not being paid or compensated right now in a very large and lucrative industry in which everybody else is. they often are willing to see where the other side is coming from on this issue. Even if they wouldn't talk about it in quite the same language, they don't really care about the philosophical differences that they have. But you have some really unlikely friendships that have sort of formed around this issue, or at least political alliances, particularly on the Senate side, where the working group that's really charging ahead on this on the Senate side includes at least three people who have or are running for president, two Republicans and a Democrat, one staunch ally of the current occupant of the White House, President Donald Trump, and one very liberal Democrat who rarely agrees with anyone who's an ally of the White House on most issues. So they're one example of a quintet. On the House side, you've also got a couple of guys who've really been leading the charge who have very little else in common on a number of issues, but have really found common ground on this one.
Thanks, Louise. Louise Radnofsky, sports reporter at The Wall Street Journal. It's 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Have you realized yet the things you wanted to do in 2019 but didn't? So one goal I have for the new year is being more connected with others around me. The best way I found to maximize my time searching and filtering through information on how is through Blinkist. You see, Blinkist takes key insights from over 3,000 nonfiction books in over 27 categories and turns them into 15-minute text and audio explainers called Blinks. Blinkist helps me to understand the core ideas of each book. So when I'm commuting to and from work, Blinkist is great for me to get into a topic quickly, find new ones, and figure out which books I want to read or listen to, like How to Make People Like You in 90 Seconds or Less by Nicholas Boothman. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/morning to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for being with us. We'll have an update on the Iranian missile attacks in just a moment. First, this: Americans should be on heightened alert for cyber attacks after Iran fired more than a dozen missiles at two military bases in Iraq, where U.S. troops are stationed. USA Today says for nearly a decade, Iran has been building up its cyber arsenal and is now considered among the major nation-state threats. On Saturday, the Department of Homeland Security warned Americans that Iran is capable of launching cyber attacks with temporary disruptive effects, as they called it, against critical U.S. infrastructure. Some experts say it could be years before Iran launches a cyber attack. The National Terrorism System Advisory recommended that Americans take precautions by backing up data and using two-factor authentication for sensitive accounts. On Sunday, a federal website went offline after a hacker uploaded photos to the site that included an Iranian flag and an image depicting a bloodied President Trump being punched in the face. The images appeared on the Federal Depository Library Program's website late Saturday before the site was taken offline. It's 9 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with three big things you need to know.
Number one, Gordon, President Trump faces one of the greatest tests of his presidency after Iran launched ballistic missiles at Iraqi bases housing U.S. troops. It was Iran's most brazen direct assault on the U.S. since the 1979 seizing of the U.S. embassy in Tehran. The strikes push Tehran and Washington perilously close to war and put the world's attention on Trump as he weighs whether to respond with more military force. Following the attack, Trump tweeted all is well and said he will address the nation later this morning. Republican Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming's reaction on Fox.
Provocations have been coming from Iran. They have been at war with us for 40 years. This was a continued escalation.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer continued to question the president.
This president's foreign policy, I describe it in two words: erratic and just wrong.
A U.S. official says there were no U.S. casualties, but it's very early. Number two, all 176 people on board a flight to Ukraine were killed when the plane crashed shortly after takeoff from Tehran's international airport. The Boeing 737 jet operated by Ukraine International took off early this morning with 167 passengers and 9 crew on board. The Ukrainian embassy says terrorism or rocket attacks have been ruled out as causes of the crash. Number three, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell McConnell says he has the votes to start President Trump's impeachment trial as soon as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi releases the documents, winning support from GOP senators to postpone a decision on calling witnesses.
Obviously, that is the most contentious part of one of these proceedings, and that'll be addressed at that time and not before the trial begins.
The announcement enables McConnell to bypass for now Democratic demands for new testimony. And if you're too lazy to mix up a cocktail, there are now machines that will do it for you. They're like Keurig Coffee machines, but for booze. Drop in a pod filled with ingredients, slide in a glass, and less than a minute later, you'll have a martini or a Moscow Mule. The machines are on display at the CES Gadget Show in Las Vegas. The companies hope to target those who like to host parties but don't want to stock a bar or don't know how to make drinks.
Wow, that's kind of next level stuff. That's me. I'm not really a mixed drink preparer. I like them.
Have it done for you at home.
That's stunning. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
New year, new budgets. Every small business has unique needs. When you partner with a Dell Small Business Technology Advisor, you get real-time, tailored advice. They'll even give you a free audit on your servers and storage devices to develop a custom solution to help improve your company's productivity. Plus, right now, upgrade to Windows 10 and get up to 45% off select business computers with Intel Core processors. To speak with a Dell Advisor, call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. A Pennsylvania girl set to undergo her 40th surgery this week was reunited with her beloved Minnie Mouse doll after news of its disappearance went viral. The mother of 13-year-old Brianna Ramirez posted on Facebook last night that her daughter found her doll. NBC News in Philadelphia says Brianna was born with a brain and connective tissue disorder that's required 39 operations so far. Her 40th surgery is scheduled to take place at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia this week. Brianna had the doll with her as she ate at a Chick-fil-A restaurant with her family Saturday in Trevose, Pennsylvania, in the Philadelphia area. At some point, however, she misplaced it. Missy Shapcott, a Chick-fil-A employee, searched through 12 trash bags but couldn't find the doll. Employees and customers joined the search. The doll is no longer manufactured, making it irreplaceable. An employee at the Chick-fil-A offered a $250 reward and free food for a year to the family of the person who found the doll. Brianna's mother, by the way, did not reveal who found the doll, but it appears now that all is well. And good luck to Brianna on surgery number 40. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.